Hello, hello, welcome everyone. So thank you to the organizers, well, for organizing the Dev Room first and for having me too. It's great to be here again. It's not the first time, like three, four times, five times, maybe, I don't remember. Anyway, so my name is Ludovic Courtès. I'm a research software engineer at INRIA, which is a French research institute in computer science. And I've been doing stuff with package management and with HPC for a while now. And in particular, I've been a contributor to Geeks for a long time. So today I want to talk about package management and putting it in the hands of users, meaning in particular in the hands of users on HPC clusters, right? So, you know, I've not always been an HPC person. I don't think I'm actually an HPC person. I don't know. But, you know, when I first got introduced to HPC, like probably many people in this audience, I discovered modules, you know, environment modules. And they are great. And I'm not saying this just before Xavier is a previous speaker, maintainer of environment modules. Hi. I mean, it's actually a very clever hack. It's more than a hack even, because it gives you a lot of flexibility on your development environment and everything. And so everybody who uses an HPC cluster these days, and even a long time ago, uses modules, right? This is great. Actually, the modules paper, the original paper, is from 1991. I think I checked it before. So it's been around for a while, and it's sort of timeless. People are still using it in 2026, and even there's a talk about EASY, I think it's called, afterwards, which is the European Environment for Scientific Software Initiative. Software installation. Anyway, and it's based on modules too. So it's really, it does a great job, and it's still around. But it also has some shortcomings. So in particular, if you go from one HPC cluster to another HPC cluster, well, maybe you'll have modules with the same name like OpenMPI, but maybe they'll have a different name, and maybe you'll get different versions, or maybe they're compiled differently, you know, so you never know. Or maybe you will just not find those modules on that other HPC cluster, and that's kind of annoying. And also, if there is software that is not available as a module, well, you'll have to go ahead and compile it by yourself on the machine. And, you know, I mean, if you're working on a complex software stack with C++, with Cocos, for example, you know, things like that, you know, building stuff by hand on the cluster is kind of annoying, right? So the way I saw it as soon pretty much as I discovered modules is that, well, maybe, I mean, why don't we have a tool like, you know, like the typical free software Linux person? I was used to APT from Debian, you know, or Yum, you know, things like that. And I was like, why don't we have something like APT on clusters, right? That would be ideal. So, I mean, of course, there are a few differences. So in particular, we need more flexibility, because in HPC, people just don't take, you know, software packages off the shelf. Sometimes they want to customize how they build packages, right? You know, sometimes they need specific versions, et cetera, et cetera. And APT typically doesn't provide that level of flexibility. And you need portability. So ideally, you know, I would like to be able to go from one cluster to another and run the same package manager command and get, you know, the same software, right? And yeah, reproducibility in the sense of being able to run the same software, you know, on different machines and also at different points in time. Because with modules, for example, if I just use one single cluster all the time for my experiments, maybe I come back to the cluster 6 months later and the modules I used are gone, or maybe they've been upgraded or reconfigured, you know, you never know. So I might find myself unable to rerun my computational experiments, and that's kind of a problem. So I thought, why don't we have a package manager for that? And well, it turns out that I had been working on Geeks as a hobby for a while, and Geeks is a package manager. And within the Geeks community, there are quite a few people actually contributing to Geeks, but also doing HPC stuff for a living, right? So with my friend Ricardo Vormus, a contributor to Geeks, at some point we thought, well, Look, we have a tool, Geeks, and it actually has good properties for HPC, right? For using it on an HPC cluster. And we thought, well, maybe we should use it and promote it as a tool for HPC clusters. And that's how we came up with this paper about having reproducible and user-controlled software environments with a package manager that people would actually use directly, right? It turns out many people had the same idea at around the same time, right? So you've probably seen these projects before. So SPAC is Bitconder. They are package managers. AppTainer is, it's not a package manager. It's a container runtime. But anyway, many people felt the need to have package managers in place on HPC clusters at the time. I get back to this a bit later. So for now, I'm going to talk about Geeks specifically in HPC and what we did, what we managed to do so far. So in terms of availability on clusters, you know, it's available in a bunch of clusters. Probably not all of you don't know about these clusters. These are relatively small, medium-sized clusters in France and in other places in Europe, in the US too. But we have Geeks directly installed on these machines, so people can actually use Geeks directly on these machines. You might notice that there are no big clusters here, right? The tier zero clusters, meaning national scale or European scale clusters. We don't have any of these on this list. I get back to this later. But anyway, so quick show of hands, who knows Geeks already? Like the entire room. Okay, I'm gonna skip quickly. That's great. Unbelievable. So on these machines, as a user, you can go ahead, you log in, and you can directly run Geeks shell, some package, Intel MPI benchmarks, for example, and then you run, you know, you use Slurm and you run your command. And this particular command comes from the environment set up by Geeks shell, right? So basically, instead of doing module load, you use Geeks shell, and it's kind of similar. You know, it sets up the environment, and you run the command directly from there. And this is wonderful because you can go to any of these clusters, and you go ahead, you run the same command, you get the same software environment, basically. So it works pretty well. And because Geeks is a package manager, well, it knows about the packages and it knows how to rebuild those packages and to modify them in all sorts of ways. So we have what we call package transformation options. And for example, I can tell Geeks, well, please take that Intel MPI benchmarks package, but replace everywhere in the graph OpenMPI by MPeach. And it will rebuild it if needed. And if it's already there, well, fine. And from there, I can run my benchmark, you know. Well, then we have manifests. We can store, you know, we can describe basically in a file the software environments that we want. And the cool feature is basically if you need to remember something about Geeks is that with two files and two commands, you can have a fully reproducible environment. So the Geeks describe command here captures exactly the precise revision of Geeks you're using. And the Geeks time machine command takes that information and reproduces the exact same Geeks from which we're using shell to reproduce the exact same environment. All right, what about performance? We have a good tool, but if performance is not here, that's kind of a problem, and people rightfully you know, wonder about this in HPC circles. So first thing is MPI. We did quite a lot of work over these years, you know, about MPI packaging because that's sort of the one of the key things you want to get right. And so typically, I spare you the details, but we have an open MPI package that is built to support all these kinds of networks that we actually encounter on this diversity of medium-sized clusters I mentioned before. And our MPI package is able to, you know, at runtime select the right backend. So if you're on a Slingshot machine, it's going to use that. If you're on an Omnipath machine, it's going to use the right backend. And this is something OpenMPI does for us, right? We just packaged it right, essentially. And speaking of Slingshot, well, you know, there's this misconception that you're never going to get the right performance if you don't use the vendor-provided MPI, like Cray MPeach, for example. And this is something we run on Adastra. This is a micro benchmark, you know, just ping pong. And we get the same performance because there's no reason it should be different. We also run not just by micro benchmarks, but also actual application, and it just works. You know, we get the expected performance because we're using, well, libcxi in this case for Slingshot. And by the way, I'm glad we contributed to having libcxi available as free software, which wasn't the case before. So the story here regarding MPI is that I think we can bring our own MPI on the machine, right? It actually works. That's also something container people wonder about. Can we bring our own MPI? Is it really going to work? Are we going to have the performance? Well, yes. And it works, and there's no surprise. You know, you don't need to do some guesswork regarding ABI compatibility, things like that. You have a well-tested software stack. You just bring it to the machine, and it works as expected. That's the story. So that's one aspect of performance, but then there's also, you know, microarchitecture. So we have this package transformation --tune that we can use to say, well, please build this Eigen benchmarks package specifically for Skylake, for example, that's on my laptop. And then, well, it gets rebuilt with the, you know, the --marge flag, and you get the expected, you know, level of performance. And likewise, now we are doing this for AMD GPUs. This is brand new, actually. The pull request was merged like a week ago, and this is really nice. So you can say, well, I want this package, but I want it to be specifically built for this and that AMD GPU. So the name are not really human meaningful, right? But there's documentation. It's like MI Instinct 250 something. Anyway, and this is pretty nice. So I did mention before that Geeks is not available on the big supercomputers, right? Like national level, European level. So how do we do? Well, we can actually use this Geeks pack command to bundle up our software stack, you know, create a bundle. So in this case, it's going to be a tarball, right? Because we know this software stack is well tested. So we create a tarball that contains Intel MPI benchmarks and all the dependencies, and then we can basically SCP it to the target supercomputer. We ship it entirely, we extract it, and from there we can directly run our stuff. So in this case, running the Intel MPI benchmark, you know, using all the software stack that was packaged in Geeks, so including OpenMPI, including all its dependency, all its dependencies, all the way down to libc. And it actually works. So in short, what we are doing now is that we're using Geeks. You can use it on your laptop. You can also use it on those tier 2 clusters where Geeks is already installed. But if you're targeting one of these bigger supercomputers, well, you can use Geeks pack to create a tarball, an Aptainer image, or a Docker image and ship it directly to the machine. So it's pretty cool, but it would be even cooler if these machines were running Geeks directly, right? All right, there are demos and tutorials you can look at if you're interested in how this actually works in practice. And people are actually using it, I should say, in a number of different fields. You know, it's not just a geeky thing, right? People are doing research using these things. All right, so this was sort of the dream part as I see it, as some of us see it, because, you know, using the package manager directly on the machine. But what about reality? Well, reality is we are still using modules, as I said before, right? So if you go to the documentation of all these major supercomputers, they say that the first thing you have to do is use modules to get the officially supported software packages, right? And I was like, why is it still the case in 2026, you know? Because Spark, for example, supports, unlike Geeks actually, supports unprivileged user installs. You know, you're supposed to be able to bring Spark or EasyBuild on the supercomputer and to run directly, you know, Spark install, etc., and get your packages there. And there's a story I keep hearing about inode quota, so maybe it rings a bell to some of you. Well, if you start using Spark install on the supercomputer, for example, then you're likely to run out of inodes because there's a quota, right? And if you build a lot of software packages, well, maybe you're going to use a lot of disk space and inodes. And this is from a user committee report of one of the French national supercomputers. So maybe that's one reason. And there's a solution to this, as I understand it. And there's going to be a SPAC talk right after me, so maybe we'll learn more about this. But anyway, one thing supercomputer admins do is that they provide, for example, SPAC or is build or both pre-configured, and also in some cases the SPAC module they provide, because it's still a module, right, is chained to the two software that the admins built with SPAC on the machine. So what that means, as I understand it, is that you're not going to have to rebuild everything, because this SPAC that you're going to use is chained with, you know, stuff that was already built. But you're still stuck with one particular version of SPAC or EasyBuild that's provided generously to you by the admins, right? You cannot just, you know, pick the version that you want. And I did a quick survey here, and, you know, some of the, so the first ones are the Euro HPC clusters, some of them provide both, some provide just one, some provide none of them, but they typically provide Aptainer or something equivalent. And the last ones are the French clusters, which are maybe a bit more conservative here. Quick show of hands, who regularly uses a supercomputer in this audience? Right, the vast majority. Who uses a package manager on supercomputers? Ah, that's still a lot of people. Okay, because I was curious about this, so I asked people operating a Dastra in France, so people at CNES. And they got me this data about SPAC usage. So it's, they provide two versions of SPAC on a Dastra, and this is one of them. And they have statistics on who basically does module load SPAC. And that's like, we're talking about 1% of the 1,200 users of a Dastra. Again, this is just one example. Maybe it's different if you go to Lumi or Jewels. I have no idea. But I do have a feeling that package managers are not so widespread still in HPC, at least not in the hands of users. Yeah, pipinstall is using a package manager, but we can have that discussion afterwards. So, yeah. All right, so what's next? What can we do about it? Actually, I have no idea, to be honest. But I can answer at least for the geek side of things. So I'm part of NumPex, which is the French HPC program for the French research program for HPC. And we get to work with a bunch of people in academia, mostly people developing scientific applications, typically, so users of HPC clusters. But we also get to talk and to work with people who operate clusters. And that's kind of interesting to me, because I would like to understand, you know, what's happening. Why are they not promoting package managers more than this? And we learn from it. So, and by the way, we're hiring. So if you're interested in all this, you can check out the hpc.geeks.info page. So one thing, for example, that we learned is that from their perspective, Geeks is a showstopper because it has a build daemon that runs as root, right? So if you're not familiar, well, when you run a Geeks command, it makes remote procedure calls to that build daemon, and that build daemon might, well, build software or download pre-built binaries or do nothing if it's already available locally. The problem is that this build daemon was running as root. The good news is that it's now fixed because, well, unprivileged user namespaces on Linux, which is what enables this work, are now widely available even on supercomputers. And so we developed a rootless variant of the Geeks daemon, and that's much better, you know, from a security perspective. For HPC sysadmins, it makes quite a big difference. And so we have some good news. Thanks to this and to additional work we've been doing over a few months now, Geeks is coming to one of these supercomputers, to a Dastra operated by CNES in France, which is you know, one of these tier one clusters. So soonish, like in the coming months, and we'll see how it goes. I hope it's going to be fruitful. I think it will be. We'll see. So I think it's time to wrap up. My impression is that we have package managers, and in particular SPAC and EasyBuild, they are the stars right in the room because they're very popular in HPC circles. They're very much used by system administrators on HPC clusters, But they were not supposed, their audience was not supposed, in my opinion, to be system administrators, right? I think the goal, you know, back in 2015 when we were young, was to put those package managers in the hands of users. And there is some success according to a quick poll we made in this room, but I think we can do better, and I hope we will actually make it a reality. And this is it. We have time for questions. Questions, anyone? Yes. Yeah, so the question is, what's stopping me and people from using Gix directly on the cluster without asking anyone? So there are several things about this. So one thing is, you know, you have, when you install Gix, you have to run this build daemon thing. It runs rootless now. But the problem is, if you install it by yourself on the machine, well, you're going to end up rebuilding lots of stuff, right? And it's going to take ages, and you're going to run out of inodes. So this is not really practical. Instead, you know, when system administrators install Gix system-wide, then everybody can use Gix, and the storage and the, you know, the computational cost is shared among everybody. So, for example, if I install GCC and somebody else installs the same GCC, it's going to be stored once on the machine, and that makes quite a big difference. Yeah, it's much better. That's a very good question. How do we assure that people are using Gix typically correctly on the supercomputer? That's a very good question. So I don't have a very good answer, to be honest. So for example, when I mentioned SPAC user and disabled user, typically system administrators provide pre-configured versions of SPAC or EasyBuild, and so they can sort of avoid the problems, I guess, some of them. But in the case of Gix, well, I mean, what we do is provide, for example, that generic OpenMPI package, so we know we can just ensure that it works on all these network interconnects. But then people can still shoot themselves in the foot, right? So I don't have a very good answer to that. So the question, if I understand correctly, is how would I run proprietary software with Gix? Install and manage. Okay. So Gix allows you to install software, be it proprietary or not. Obviously, I'm not a fan of proprietary software, but we have people using CUDA, obviously, on HPC clusters. And so we have CUDA packages, for example, and at the command line level, it works in pretty much the same way as any other package. You know, you don't see the difference, except that it's CUDA, so it's a bit clunky, but it's not a problem. Yes?
Can Gix be combined with the modules that already exist on the
system? Can Gix be combined with the modules already available on the system? No, it cannot. And that's one of the fundamental differences between Gix and EasyBuild or SPAC. EasyBuild and SPAC are specifically designed to allow you to combine, you know, SPAC-provided, EasyBuild-provided packages with modules. And not just modules, but everything that happens to be in userlib, for example, which can be nice, but the downside is that if you go from one machine to another, well, you're not going to have the same modules. So how do you, you know, deploy the same software stack? You cannot really do that, right? And so instead, Gix, you know, controls the entire software stack, and so everything is handled by Gix, which means you can also test the software stack before you actually start using it on those machines. Question? Does the build daemon have to be on the same machine as Gix? No, it doesn't have to be. Yes, so in practice, it's on a cluster. There's one dedicated node for the build daemon. That's how people do it. Probably you're wondering about the security thing, right? Yes, Well, the security thing, I mean, it's on a, typically people on clusters install it on a separate node, dedicated node, but still, you know, there's also security is also in part about paperwork, and you know, people are more comfortable with having a rootless daemon, which, I mean, is also understandable, generally speaking, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. So time is a busy. Is it a security risk if users install stuff and others use that stuff and that stuff is not secure, right? I don't think so, because to reuse the software, you have to sort of do it on purpose. Like, for example, the, you know, the Intel MPI benchmarks where I customized and swapped OpenMPI by MPitch. Unless you explicitly ask for that, you're not gonna get the, you know, the file name of that binary, so you cannot, you won't end up running it by mistake, right? You have to explicitly ask for it to actually run it. I guess we have to wrap up, but we can.
Is
the next speaker, so question. In the rootless builder, the installation directory is still a shared GNU store directory? Yes, it is. Yes. That doesn't
still access or like write access to this GNU store
directory. Does the daemon have write access to the GNU store directory? The daemon has write access to the GNU store directory, but only the daemon does. So as a user, you cannot write into that directory. Only the daemon does. It's a trusted third party. Okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. Now for SPAC.